Good morning, beautiful people. What a show we have for you today. We have life coach, author, Kelly Jones, and man, does she have a story to tell and so much information to share. So let's do it.
Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher, hey, hey, hey. It's the unknown preacher, hey, hey, hey. Unknown preacher, unknown preacher, unknown preacher, unknown preacher.
This episode is brought to you by Kingdom Harvest Church, helping people discover, develop, demonstrate, and duplicate God's love as disciple-making leaders. Visit their webpage at www.khcnc.org. Kingdom Harvest Church.
All right.
Unknown Preacher LA podcast in K-Town, man. Natasha just blew it up. Y'all already know Natasha. She does our praise and worship every other Sunday. Natasha, man, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was really a blessing to be here with the kids. I think that Jesus showed up in the room and he showed out.
Amen. Amen. We're going to keep stomping for Jesus, but I just wanted to thank you personally and just can't wait till we do this again.
All right. I would love to do it again. Thank you so much, Chief James, the unknown preacher. That's who he is, y'all.
Oh, since you let it out the bag. All right, y'all. God bless you, Natasha. Good morning, beautiful people, and welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA. I'm your host, the Unknown Preacher, aka LA, aka Lonzo, just a nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody. And glory to God, we thank him for another episode. Hey, and guess what? It's all good. Because I am fearfully and wonderfully made, and so are you. Hey, definitely want to recognize all of our supporters. We're making this an amazing journey because of you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our podcast. And it's important that you know, you already know, at least suspect that we are working for Jesus. That's right. And another reminder, we will be in Norlina, North Carolina on September 21st at 2 p.m. at Peanut and Zeb's Grocery Store, 137 Heiko Street, Norlina, North Carolina. And guess what? We just sealed the deal. Doc the DJ will take care of the music for us. So, nice music, free food, prizes, and we're giving away $500 to the biggest Unknown Preacher LA follower. So be ready for our podcast trivia. Right? So our guest today is another phenomenal woman of God. She's a student of life and knows a lot about a lot of different things. So I am so honored to have her on. Please welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, public speaker, life coach, consultant, researcher, author of Forward, It Is Tangible, and host of the Moving Forward podcast, Coach KJ Kelly Jones. Kelly, how are you, my sister?
Hello, unknown preacher.
Oh, how are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent.
Good, good, good. So before we hit record, y'all, now Kelly put her podcast host hat on because she, and I'm used to like calming some of the guests. Most of them are already, you know, but some who've never been on a podcast or heard their voices, or you know, a little anxious. And she said, "Are you nervous?" And I was like, "Damn, I felt like I was a guest now." But no, Kelly putting that host hat on, right? And you are also saying something that I list all these wonderful things you're doing. And then you had me fall up out of my seat when you talked about comedy, dabbling into that. So before we really get into it, tell me what you were saying about doing some comedy.
Oh, you know what? I tell you something. My ministry, my purpose, my ministry is about depth. Yes. Not just looking at the surface of things. We really have to go deeper to develop a greater appreciation of who we are, the things around us, the opportunities, etc. And yeah. So with that being said, a lot of times I like to leave people laughing or on an up note. And I've toyed around with it with a couple of my friends. I'm like, you know, maybe I need to be a stand-up comedian. You know, I've seen some other people out there and I think I could do it. I think I could do it. But I haven't really... so many other things going on around me. I haven't really had a chance to walk out there and try it, but yeah, that is one of my bucket list things to do a little stand-up routine.
I think that's awesome. And our job is to encourage one another. You definitely should dabble into that. The Kelly I know, she's going to ace anything she put her mind to. So yeah, please, man, explore that.
I feel like I'm gonna have to pay you a whole lot of money after this.
No,
I hope that was a free comment. You're going deep, brother.
Totally free. We create an environment where we encourage each other, and I want all my guests to know how special they are, and all of us are special and unique. And I just listed a number of things you dabble in. So it's obvious that you are super talented. So,
Thank you. God's grace.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I love your book, the concept, and you as a person. You're good people, you know? You're real good people. So. Now, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, first of all, you forgot one of my books.
My
other book is John and Susie, One Woman and Four is a Susie.
I failed on my research, man.
No, never. Look, you're still my hero. I got a little shrine in the back. No, I'm just kidding. Only worship God. But look, you are still my hero. I just remember when we were in Toastmasters together. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I said is, I am not going up against Alonzo. You can put me in any category, but we are not going to do it. And we never did it, did we?
No, we didn't. But I remember you winning some contests, some of the competitions too. So, yeah, super talented. And I'm always interested. So your book, I love having dialogue surrounding mental health. We talked about it a number of times on the show, mental illness, disabilities, because there are so many stigmas attached to these subjects. And so far too long, we've just avoided the conversation. So when you and I agreed that you would come on here, that I said, I definitely have to ask you about that. But then I was doing my research and I found that you also teach communication skills, right?
Right. Well, I coach communication skills. I coach people through communication skills. And basically the coaching part of it is because of the society we live in, we have a lot of influencers. And I want you to think about this. Growing up, who were your influencers? When you think about it, when you were growing up, who did you have to influence what you wanted to do, what you wanted to say, what you didn't want to say?
Yes. So for me, I had older cousins. And so I always talk about Ronald Brown, John Brown, my uncle, who was one of the first African-American detectives with the Raleigh Police Department. I didn't have a big brother then, or I didn't know I had a big brother. And so my older cousins were like my heroes. I would follow my cousin Chris Thomas around. So, yeah, those were some of the influencers for me.
They were family and they were close by or accessible, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So they kind of probably had some of the same influencers or, you know, had some similar stories or some similar experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And today, in today's world, what happens is kids are now going to school with people from different countries, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different interests, different rules. And so, and they're influencers, and their mm-hmm. teachers may come from a different, you know, culture, and you've got different TV channels, you've got so many different influencers, social media, et cetera. And they're global influences, which may not have the same contextual background or reference as to what you have, right?
Yeah.
So you may not be able to buy all the makeup that Paris Hilton buys because your pocketbook says no. Or you may not be able to wear the same sneakers as somebody else because, excuse me, that's just not where you are, you know, when you have other necessities in place.
Yeah.
And so what happens is because people are trying to fit into the mold of acceptance or par with their peers, sometimes what happens is they start to get disappointed when they can't talk about certain social influencers.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Those social influencers may not be what's really important to them or what they really need. They just know that the people around them have that, right?
Yeah.
So my goal is to help people understand like what's most important to them. Is it really the sneakers, or is it that you want to fit in, or is it that you want to have a conversation with other people? Or is it that you want something nice on your feet? So when you start to break it down as to what's most important, what's at the core of things, mm-hmm. then you can start to more effectively communicate what you want. One of the things I say, one of the examples that I give is, and that may have been a little bit more complex, but think about this. There are people who like dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the cool people. So you want to hang out with the cool people. So you start to like dogs, or, you know, these are people yeah. that you grew up with. So you like dogs too. When you start to look at self-assessments, when you start to reevaluate things as far as what your priorities are, you may say, hey, look, you know what? Dogs are important, but also gardening is important. You know, I like gardening. And as you start to look more and more at self-assessments, and you start to understand more of what you like, you say, hey, wait a minute, I like gardening more than I like dogs. Once you realize what's most important to you, how do you communicate that to others? How do you still keep those friends? How do you say, hey, look, you know, we're still cool, but yeah. I really do like gardening.
Yeah.
A lot of times what happens is because we don't have those big brothers or, you know, people that we had beforehand solely influencing us, we now have more options, right? Mm-hmm. So beforehand, if your influencers were, or the people you looked up to were policemen, then you may have wanted to be a policeman. But now people have policemen, they have doctors, they have lawyers, they have all these IT people that some of our mentors or some of the people that we looked up to in the past may not have access to those types of careers. So how do you effectively communicate what you're now interested in and get the support you need? And that's where I coach people along to say, hey, look, you know what? Let's not look at just one particular thing. Let's not just look at dogs. What are some of the other things that might interest you? What are some of the other things that might excite you? What are some of the things in the environment? How do you learn? How do you process? How do you ask for support the way that you learn or the way that you process things? So, I don't know. So once again, basically just helping people to understand who they are, what they like, what their interests are, and then being able to effectively communicate that to others who may not have those same experiences. You know, when I was growing up, my mom wanted me, I wanted to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And because my mother was a teacher, and she said, no, you know, you're supposed to be something different. You're not supposed to be a teacher. You're supposed to go into corporate America. Well, my mom really didn't know the first thing about corporate America. She just wanted me to have more than what she had.
Yeah.
And then after going out and being in corporate America, I'm teaching through coaching, but I'm teaching in a different arena than she probably would have ever thought about.
That's deep. I love that. I think so many young people could benefit from that. And you actually talked about that in your book about your goal being to help people discover pathways, and you just broke it down perfectly for us. And I'll tell you, and you said it might be a little too complex, but it makes perfect sense when you think about it. I was just having this conversation with a colleague earlier this week, and we were just talking about when we were young and how I think it's very common among so many young people. They really feel alone and they want to mm-hmm. fit in and they want to belong. And I love how you said that, because I started playing basketball because my friends were playing basketball, but I like watching it, but I really didn't really like playing it. But it's the things we do to fit in. And also what I like about your book is that you're giving them more than hope. You're actually giving them clear direction. So kudos.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the key things, is giving people the opportunity to move forward the way that they, using their skills, their strengths, their interests, the way that they want to move forward. Yeah. We have really, 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 really smart kids today. I substitute taught for 3.5 years, made absolutely no money, but I wanted to understand why, quote unquote, kids were not ready to learn. That's what I kept hearing. These kids are not ready. They can't do it. They can't do it. They can't do it. And I was a highly sought after substitute teacher, because when I taught, every single kid in my class handed in their paperwork. Mm-hmm. And the teachers were like, how do you get every single child to hand in their paperwork? I said, I listen to them. Mm-hmm. When they tell me what they can't do, I ask them, first of all, who told them? Where do they get it from? Because I need to understand what's going to be the float influencer, or what's going to be the thing that validates them.
Yes.
And then what we do is we walk through the process of doing it the way that they want to learn, the way that they laugh, not what you do this because I said it. Let's talk through it. Mm-hmm. And by the time the class ends, those kids who were told that they couldn't do things or what they weren't going to do, they were the ones that were raising their hands, teaching others, and laughing and joking about the lesson. So when we talk about being a comedian, if you can bring laughter and joy to something that may have been deemed stressful beforehand,
yes,
it increases the level of re-engagement. And so when people develop that type of self-confidence, when they understand who they are, when they can effectively communicate yes and no, like, yes, I can do that, or no, we shouldn't do that because of something, effectively communicating it, then they're more confident and they're more eager to engage. So we have very, very smart kids. When I was teaching, I remember teaching a group of kids, and on the internet, you can learn a lot of things that yeah. your teacher may not be ready for, right? I'm not talking about Mensa level. I'm not talking about, the top 2% on the IQ level. I'm just talking about just everyday kids in school. And there were a group of kids that the teacher's like, oh, they're bad. They're bad. They can't do this. They can't do that. So I said, and I was co-teaching a class, I said, let me take them in the separate room, the kids that are giving you difficulty. So I took the kids into a separate room, and we were doing positive, negative integers. And, if you get one thing wrong in the sequence, you have the whole problem wrong.
Yeah.
And so I took the kids into the other room. And what I realized was, guess what? They got everything right. They got everything right. The thing was, they would get, when we were talking, I would say, okay, now look at this. We take it slow. Look at this problem. You tell me what you did wrong. Tell me how to do this. They knew. Wow. But what was happening is because they were smart, they were raising their hands or they were blurting out answers, the teacher got upset with them and the teacher would say, okay, you get lunch detention. Okay, you get, you know, in school suspension, or you get a warning and this kind of thing. Because the teacher wasn't ready for their brilliance. So now you've got these kids who shut down. They're told they're bad all the time. So what do? They become bad. I'm bad. Well, I'm going to be the baddest bad. But if you flip that story and you teach kids how they learn, look, you know what? I'm an audio learner. I'm not getting it. I mean, you're putting that stuff on the board. You're telling me to read. I'm not getting it. We need the dialogue so that I can understand it. So if you teach kids how they learn, if you teach kids their strengths and their awesomeness, if you teach an introvert that, you know what, your introvert skills are the most powerful thing in this classroom, you can make a difference using your skills. If you teach an extrovert, yes, your skills are powerful. Let's use those skills in a powerful way.
You know, so a few weeks ago, I had Kimberly Outlaw. She's on the Lenoir County School Board, and we were talking about this. And so that story just reinforces what I've been saying about the school systems. We really need to reimagine how public schools look for our kids. I think we're missing out on so many opportunities. And that model that you just talked about is just so spot on, and it is really in individualizing those skills and helping them prepare for real world experiences. So,
that's awesome. And with that, it has to be universal. Yeah. Because if the kid understands and the parent understands, but the teacher doesn't understand, or the social worker doesn't understand, or you know, the clinician doesn't understand, it really just doesn't go anywhere. It's like din. And that's where I'm finding the frustration is. You know, we talk about 49.5% of kids have had a mental health crisis. We talk about the fact that suicide is up. We talk about suicide amongst African-American males between the ages of 10 and 19 is up 60%. We talk about depression. We talk about anxiety. We talk about all these things. But one of the key things that I find over and over again as a life coach, as a deaconess, as, you know, just an everyday person, is that people are talking up. People are saying I'm in pain. People are saying they're hurting, but nobody's listening. People say, you know, don't worry about that. Stop exaggerating. But they don't understand the depth, the frequency, and the duration of a person's pain. And so they dismiss it. And so we can't say these kids are not talking up. What we can say is that we're not speaking a universal language to get these kids the best solution possible. Or look at the fact that right now there's a 130% female physicians have a 130% higher rate of suicide than the general population. Hmm. Right?
What do they contribute that to, Kayla?
Huh?
You know what they contribute that to?
You know what? They are trying to help these patients that are out there, right? Uh-huh. But they're finding women are nurturing. You go into the profession to help, to cure, but uh-huh. they're reaching all these roadblocks and they're seeing patients die that shouldn't die. They're seeing cases get worse that shouldn't get worse. You know, their hands are held by, you know, maybe parents don't believe in doing certain things, you know, certain practices, which may be, be more of a solution versus a Band-Aid. You know, maybe insurance companies don't support it. Maybe, you know, you're in a situation where you have two parents arguing. One parent wants to do it. One parent doesn't want to do it. But whatever it is, it's not so much that they don't know what the solution is that they don't have access to the solution. And when you see that happen over and over and over again, it becomes daunting. Wow. When you see people lose their lives or lose their quality of life that didn't need to at your hands, you know, it can be daunting. So, yes, it's a 40% higher rate for male physicians, but 130% higher rate for female physicians.
That's wild. Yeah. Now, you touched on this, too. You talked about self-assessment and self-reporting and that process. So I really like that when I was reading your book. I can tell It well, it kind of reminded me of, and it may sound far-fetched, of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, because first you admit that you're an alcoholic because no one can help you without this admission, right? And that's, am mm-hmm. I off track, or is that, tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm.
Well, the only thing I say is first is discovery. Mm-hmm. So because we have so many influencers, as I list beforehand, mm-hmm. When you first do a self-assessment, mm-hmm. like maybe 70% of what your responses are going to be based on the influencers around you.
Yeah.
So you could say, ah, nah, no, you know, I know who I am. Da, 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 da. But as you take the test, you know, repeatedly, you know, you take it one time, 3 months later, you take it again. And 6 months later, you take it again. Because each and every day we have new influencers, right? So mm-hmm. that within itself is going to enable us to get a different test result. But if you take it. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Do you hear music?
We're winding down. We got about 15 seconds, but I tell you what. So what we're going to do, because there's so much more to dive into for our Radio 1 listeners, go to our podcast to get the full interview. But until then, I will see you next time. I caught the Holy Ghost, at least I thought so, but the elders in church said I'm putting on a show. I want to catch the Holy Ghost and know how it feels, because I'm looking at Miss Eartha and it looks so real. And then there's Miss Brenda, who gave a big shout, but I'm sitting still in the pew, so I'm starting to doubt if I'm really saved. Did I gain salvation? I sit when they sing over fear of humiliation. And then there are the ones who are speaking in tongues, and Mr. Pat's up front, and then he suddenly runs. Now I know the Father and the Spirit and the Son. So where are my gifts? I'm looking. I see none. I'm not mean. I'm not bad. And my light is not dim. But they're looking at me crazy because I'm not moving like them. But then there was a man in the back of the pew. He said, your relationship with God is special and specific to you. God knows your heart, whether you stand or move. So focus on the Lord. You have nothing to prove. So I'm asking the Lord to tell me what to do, because I'm catering to Jesus. I'm not catering to you. Holy Ghost word. All right, we are back, and what a great discussion with Kelly. Kelly, we were talking, I was talking about the stages when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, and can you, and I guess I was looking for a comparative to the stages when you were talking about self-reporting and that process. Can you talk about those stages?
Wow. First of all, love the poem. Love the poem.
Thank you so much.
That was a great segue into what we're talking about. And it covers those stages. And I mean, there's multiple stages. If you look at the back cover of my book, there's multiple stages of self-awareness that come along the way as you go through your journey. But three key areas. One is discovery, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Discovering about yourself, discovering about your environment, just all the influence, discovery, embracing it with a greater depth. Number two is self-awareness, right? What you mm-hmm. like, what you don't like, kind of going through that two-year-old stage, you know? I like it. I don't like it. And then number three, or being able to say no. But number three is that self-efficacy of moving forward. And even with self-efficacy, there's still some no's. You know, it takes a lot of confidence and a lot of strength to know who you are and say no because of who you are. Not no because of fear, not fear of failure. And that's one of the things that's really big with kids right now. When I was substitute teaching, a lot of kids wouldn't do gym. Right. I could be in a classroom of 250 kids and only 30 or 40 would be out there playing basketball and everybody else would be sitting on the side on their phone. And I would ask the kids, like, why aren't you out playing? You know, gym used to be the thing for me when I was growing up. And they're like, Miss Jones, if we do it right, and we make a mistake while playing basketball, somebody's going to film it and then they're going to laugh at us and then we're going to be on social media. Wow. So we don't want to go out there and get embarrassed. So that's a no. That's a fear. There's another no, like Balaam the donkey, where he's like, I'm telling you, you don't need to go any further. So there's the discovery, once again, of the things that are around you and a greater appreciation of them and a greater appreciation of your strengths. My book is all about strengths, your strengths and resources, self-awareness to say, hey, look, you know what? This is what I like, what I don't like through the discovery. And then once again, self-efficacy to move forward. But to move forward, some things you got to prune and some things you got to add on or multiply or, you know, do exponentially. Yeah. But having that awareness and that grounding will help to get you there.
That's deep. I love everything that I'm hearing. And you're making me think about, so those who follow the podcast, the show, they know that I'm always talking about connecting with our young people and how we're losing them in the church. We're seeing less and less young people in church, and where everything you're saying, it just seems kind of connected. What are your thoughts?
You know, once again, depth, right? Mm-hmm. Listening to kids, hearing kids out. And so one day I was teaching a science class, and, you know, you can't really talk about God. Well, as a substitute, the reason why I substitute taught, first of all, let me tell you this. The reason why I was a substitute teacher and I refused to take teaching positions, even though they told me many, many times, as a substitute teacher, you can say, oh, I didn't know. I'm so sorry. You get away with a whole lot of stuff helping kids, right?
Yeah.
If you say you didn't know. But once you become a part of the system, you don't have that type of excuse. And so one of the things is that one day I was talking to the kids and I was teaching a science class and we were talking about heat. Mm-hmm. And there was a little boy who said, yeah, he said, like, I can't wait to go to hell. I said, what? Hmm. He said, yeah, like, I can't wait to go to hell. He said, that's where it's going to be so hot and my skin's going to peel off of me. And I said, wait a minute. I said, has anybody ever taken you to church and talked about, you know, the opposite, God and heaven? And the little boy was like, yeah, I go to church every Sunday with my grandmother. And the little girl beside him was like, yeah, I go to church every Sunday. And I could tell you about that. And they started telling me the biblical stories in detail. Like, wow. Like they were teaching the Sunday school class because they've been going to Sunday school forever, all their life. Mm-hmm. But Sunday school wasn't fun to them. Going to hell was fun to them. The scary part about that. Now, keep in mind, they're in the class. They're in church on Sunday.
Yeah.
Get this. If these kids desire to go to hell, what do they have to do to know that they're going to hell? To know for sure that they're going to hell?
Oh, break all rules. Just be reckless, rebellious, without a care in the world.
Okay, you're breaking all rules, being reckless without a care in the world. But guess what? You still may not believe that you've done enough to go to hell. The reason why I tell you this is we have to take a deeper look when we talk about taking kids to church. Yes, you can take them to church. But if you're not listening to them, if you're not engaging them, if it's not exciting to them, if there's no purpose, no vision, no nothing with church, then it's just an activity.
Yeah.
It's just a check in the box. So if we're going to work with our kids and if we're going to do something different and keep in mind the kids that I'm talking about in 5-10 years, they're going to be parents. Mm-hmm. They're so far towards whatever, you know, towards this type of destructive or deviant behavior. What's going to happen when they have kids?
Yeah.
What's going to happen when they get married? So we have to take out this time now to unlayer those things. And when I was teaching, when I was substitute teaching, what I did was I taught them about their strengths. And when I taught them about their strengths, I taught them how to communicate those strengths effectively. I work with teachers and guidance counselors and the rest on the ability to understand, not to just overgeneralize, not just to say, okay, this means this. Tell me more. Ask the question, why? Mm. Yeah, Johnny didn't bring in his pencil, but why? I'll give you another example. I'm sorry. I was teaching in class, right? And I was co-teaching this class, and it was a little boy. Alonzo, he was dressed too neat. The pants were, you know, neat. The shirt was neat. The haircut was too neat to be a defiant kid. But he was sitting in the back. There was a back area where the kids were sitting on the sofas and all this other kind of stuff. And then there were the desk in the center of the class, right? Mm-hmm. And so I saw him in the back lounging. And I was like, you know what? I know his mother is like, I know my son is not in the back of the class lounging. My son is up there learning something, right? Mm-hmm. So I said something to the little boy. I said, you know, I need you to sit up and pay attention to the lesson. I said, why don't you sit in one of the chairs? He said, I don't have a pencil. Or no, I was telling him to write down the lesson or whatever. He said, I don't have a pencil. I said, you don't have a pencil? He said, no. He said, Ms. Jones, I would do it, but I don't have a pencil. So I asked around the class. All the kids on the periphery, on the perimeter of the class, the outside of the class, they didn't have a pencil. So I went to the vice principal and I said, can I get 4 pencils? He said, I'll give you 7. I said, okay, good. Because 7 is completion in the Bible, right?
Yeah.
I said, give me 7. So he gave me the 7 pencil sharpener. I said, look, I will pay you whatever I need to pay you. Because in a lot of the schools, they make the kids pay for the pencils, right? Mm-hmm. And now the main teacher's like, I don't know why you're getting a pencil. I got a pencil when I was going to school. My kids got pencils when they go to school. We coddle them too much, da-da-da-da-da. Like just belittling the kid, you know, ranting in the class, right? Mm-hmm. So I give the kid the pencil. Within the first 10 minutes of the class is only 40 minutes long, right? So I wasted 10, not, you know, wasted, but I spent 10 going to get the pencils, came back. Mm-hmm. So we're halfway through the class after 10 minutes. Do you know he is now teaching the other kids in the class? He was learning positive and negative integers in his head.
Mm-hmm.
When he got a pencil, he moved up in the class and he started teaching the class.
Wow. Wow.
We're not giving kids these opportunities because sometimes teachers don't understand. And the one thing that I found is those smart kids, some teachers who feel insecure are like, if this kid is answering questions in the class, I'm going to lose control of the class because the students are going to start looking to them for answers instead of me. So let me control this by disciplining that child and making that child be quiet because I want respect. I need respect in the class.
Yeah.
So some teachers are more concerned about respect than they are about the learning process.
You know, I'm just sitting here and this was an old television show. I don't know if you remember it, but it was called, I think it was called Kids Are People Too or something like that. And it just makes me think about everything you're saying, even with the church, with the school, when we treat them like they're people and don't talk down to them. And it's my way or the highway. And that type of mentality kind of ostracizes these young people. And they don't want to be up. They don't feel like they're a part of the process and they disengage.
Immediately. When I was teaching, I would say to my kids, I say, well, you know, who do you talk to? And they're like, you. And I'm like, look, you're in the 10th grade or you're in the 8th grade. And you mean to tell me all those teachers you had, all those teachers in this school, you don't have anybody to talk to? Ms. Jones, they don't listen.
Wow.
And there were some crisis situations where I went to guidance counselors and I told the guidance counselors what the crisis was with students, thinking that I was helping the students. It made life worse for the students. And I realized that I don't know if it's so much that the administration doesn't care. I think the administration doesn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that goes back to, are we looking for Band-Aids or are we looking for solutions?
Yeah.
And that's why I wrote the book, because I can't help everybody. Like, I can't reach everybody, but mm-hmm. I figured the book would be a tool that now these kids can go to their teachers. You know, if you've got teachers and kids on the same page, they can say, hey, look, this is what's going on, or this is what I need, or this is how I learn. Or this is my learning skill, or this is the best work environment. But once again, there needs to be a universal language because people aren't understanding it. People are not getting it.
There are just so many takeaways in your book. And I was just thinking too about, well, for me, the negative consequences of being a people pleaser, you know, spending mm-hmm. all your time helping and doing for others and how draining that is. You touched on that. And I'll say just one of the most empowering things for me was to tell someone no. Once I learned that I can use that word no, it was just so empowering. Because I admit I can be a people pleaser myself, but I also learned a long time ago this thing called perception. And so what I tell myself is, if I really care about this person, am I really helping them by enabling them and always rescuing them? So, but yeah, I really loved and appreciated that part about being a people pleaser.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a scenario where a young lady asked me for money to pay her bills, and we didn't have any money. I mean, my ex-husband and I, we were like, really like two fish and five loaves of bread, taking one pork and bean and cutting it four ways.
Yeah.
And so she was like, you know, I need money to pay for the kids. I need money for this, need money for that. And you know, my ex-husband, I mean, we had friends with six car garages, something in every bay. And we also had friends who were single parents with 10 kids, you know, living in public housing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were engaged in all different kinds of conversations, especially as a deaconess. And so this young lady made this request. And so I was like, I said, you know, something's not right in my spirit. I pray on everything. I pray for my purpose daily. I pray for my purpose long term. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm praying and I'm like, God, are we really supposed to help her? So as I'm praying for a solution, the next day we find out that Habitat for Humanity is building her house. Right.
Wow. Yeah.
So I have a conversation with her. She's like, oh, yeah, Habitat for Humanity is building that. She said, because, you know, I was scared. I was trying to figure out how I was going to keep my 54-inch TV. So she was looking for us to pay for her rent and food and electricity and all the rest. Yeah. So she could keep her 54-inch TV. And I'm looking at a little 20-inch TV, you know, look, and having the Super Bowl at my house.
Oh, man, no. Everybody watching my little
20 or 27, whatever it was. But yeah. But the point that I'm getting to is, yes, there are times when you really need to pray and understand, is it something you're supposed to do?
Yes.
You know, or in doing it, are you glorifying and honoring God? Or are you trying to bring glory and honor to self? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to put the control in it to say, look at what I did? Look at what I'm a part of? Or are you trying to say, you know what? God, you're in control. You handle this. You know, I'm not Noah. I can't build the ark.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not Nehemiah. I'm not in charge of Jeremiah, the wall, mm-hmm. rebuilding the wall. You know, I'm not that person. And I'm willing to be humble and support where I can. So one thing that I did want to say, though, and you mentioned on it earlier, was mental health. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I do give presentations on mental health. I've spoken to people on mental health. I coach on mental health, etc. And the funniest thing is I talk to everybody. One was talking in high school. I was talking to the guy, Geek Squad, and et cetera, et cetera. And he's a psychology major. And when I asked them about mental health, or was a psychology major, when I asked them about mental health, there's all these stigmas. There's, you know, schizophrenia, bipolar, yeah. and all these different things. But if you look at mental health, if you really look at mental health, it is simply one word that can be used to define mental health. Are you ready for it?
I am ready.
Are you really, really ready? Really, no, really, just kidding. Really, really ready. That was it.
What was it?
Readiness.
Oh, wow.
Are you ready for what comes next? So are you ready to go outside in the middle of the storm? Are you ready to take that math test? Are you ready to run that race? Are you ready to be in a confrontational environment? Are you ready? And if you look at the readiness, you know, at your readiness, whether or not you're ready, what's keeping you from being ready? It may be something physical. It may be something within your immune system. It may be something within your central nervous system where you have neuroinflammation on the brain. It may be something with, you know, it may be something that was genetically passed down to you. It may be all these different things. But a lot of times when we see an adverse social behavior or an adverse social response, we automatically say it's a psychological condition. One of the things that I talked about recently was seasonal affective disorder. So if you're a person who has a lot of melanin in your skin, you're darker complexion, or you're, you know, biracial, whatever it may be, but you have color in your skin, there is a greater likelihood of you having what is called seasonal affective disorder. And seasonal affective disorder just means that you need additional amounts of melanin to get the endorphins that other people receive. So if you have, let's say, if you're the level of melanin in your skin is an 8, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But during the winter months, you only get a 4, right? From being outside, the external melon.
Yeah.
And so you don't get the endorphins that you need, right? So now you can feel sad. You can feel sad from October to February. That is 5 months. That is seasonal affective disorder. If you go to a psychiatrist, psychologist, whomever, and you don't understand that it started in October and it ends in February, and it's based on the melanin in your skin, a psychologist interviewing you can make you believe, not intentionally, not maliciously,
yeah,
but through the questioning, you may say, yeah, I've had this for 6 months. Well, the difference between 5 months and 6 months is, once again, 5 months is seasonal affective disorder. 6 months is depression. So 6 months, you DSM, in order to have a clinical diagnosis, a mental health diagnosis, you have to have the condition for 6 months or more.
Interesting.
And that's where my book helps people to understand, like, what is it? How long has it been going on? What was the core of it? You know, what is the frequency? What is the duration? What is the depth of what I'm going through? And then once I understand that, and what are my strengths? What are my strengths that can pull me out of it? What are my resources? How do I communicate? Hey, look, you know what? This is my best work environment, or this is what I need. This is what I need from you. How do I effectively communicate that? And then how do I find those alliances to help me move forward?
Wow.
It's a strengths-based book. It brings out the awesomeness in you. What do you have to increase your insight on your purpose, your strengths, your gifts, your communication style, your social setting? It's all about your strengths. It's all about you.
Man, I love it. It's so many, it's so much in your book. And but I want to make certain, because we have probably about a little less than 10 minutes. So I'm trying to pull out things that really touch me. Autism, you talked about intellect challenge mindset and autism. Can you kind of touch on that?
So first of all, I want to go back to something with regards mm-hmm. to autism. Mm-hmm. Autism is something that you are born with. You mm-hmm. don't develop it later on in life. Mm-hmm. And so when there's a regression in social behavior, when there's a regression in your cognitive responses to your environment, that means that something happened along the way to give you autistic symptoms.
Huh.
So one of the things that I talk about in my book is individuals who have, actually there are persons with autism. If you're talking about Stallman, the world's mm-hmm. famous, the world's strongest man. Mm-hmm. But once again, with regards to autism, that is one of the key things, is understanding what is the core of it. How did it start? And understanding, like, you know, what is the psychological, neurological, and what are the cognitive components of what you're going through, and immunology components of what you're going through. Gotcha. So with regards to an intellectual challenge mindset is basically, look at this. It's the ability to look at adverse situations and see something positive coming out of it, right? Mm-hmm. So when persons are challenged intellectually with what they cannot do, turn it around and understanding your strengths to show what you can do. So with autism, use this story of Thomas Alva Edison.
Mm-hmm.
He was in school and basically the school sent him home. They sent a letter, wrote a letter to the mom saying, hey, look, you know what? We can't teach him here. He's going to be hopeless. He's going to be in a mental institution. He's da, 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 da. Now, once again, this is a school setting that has not been exposed to a lot of different opportunities or options, right? They are taking a snapshot view of this child and they're making a decision on what this child should or should not be, what he can or cannot do, right? So with that being said, and I don't know if you know this, but I work for Duke Center for Autism and Brain Development. And the reason why I work there, or the reason why they hired me, is because the clinician said, hey, look, you know what? We work with these kids, or we work this population during a hour, or, you know, work with these kids for an hour out of their entire day. We need parents to work in this department because you work with a kid, you work with your children 24 hours a day. So, you know, what they're like at home as versus being in a clinical environment, right?
Yeah.
With that being said, Thomas Alva Edison's mother, she was with him, you know, all day. So she knew his capabilities. So what she did was she brought him home. Mm-hmm. She told him that the school, he didn't read the letter. She told him that the school said that he was a genius and they couldn't handle him in the school and that he needed to be taught at home. And so what she started to do was teach him at home. And we know that he's created millions of, I mean, not millions, but hundreds of patents and made major inventions, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even want to say hundreds. I don't know how many patents. I don't have a list in front of me. But we know that he's made major contributions to our society today. And that is because of someone who did not take just a snapshot of his potential or his intellectual prowess, but looked at him in his totality and said, hey, look, you know what? This may not be the right learning environment for him because it's not his strength, mm-hmm. right? So understanding his strength and using his strength to help him excel. So my middle son was has an intellectual challenge. He has actually immunodeficiency. Mm-hmm. And so when he was growing up, I taught him times tables on the trampoline.
Wow.
So he felt it with the, he felt it like 1, 2, 3, you know, 1, 2, 3 was a high jump. 6 was a high jump. 9 was a high jump. 12 was a high jump. So he learned that way.
Well, what put it in you? I hate to cut you off, but I'm curious. What put it in you to say, hey, I'm going to use this as a means to teach him? That's ingenious.
I saw him laugh when he got on the trampoline.
Wow.
So when I saw him laugh getting on the trampoline, that meant, okay, you know what? This is an environment where he can learn. And because he laughed, that meant that he would go back to it. He would re-engage without force.
Man.
So when you understand a person's strengths, therefore you can help him excel. Yeah. When he was, please forgive me, when he was growing up, I noticed that he was having difficulty understanding. Like he couldn't really understand. He had PDD, NOS, pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. So he could not really clearly hear what you were saying.
Yeah.
So what I did was I actually taught him to write out his words. So he read everything instead of audibly learning. And we used post-caption TV.
Gotcha. That's great. Hey, we're running out of time. Please tell everyone how they can get your book.
So actually, you can find everything on my website. My website is forwardlifecoach.com. And my book is on Amazon. It's Forward Life. Forward It Is Tangible. Also, John and Susie, One Woman and Four is a Susie. They're both found on Amazon. But if you look at my website, you find everything that you need.
Wow. Kelly Jones, you are truly a Renaissance woman. We thank you for joining us. And that's our show. Remember, like us, follow us, subscribe. And no matter how high we get, we'll never stop looking up to God. God bless you. Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown Preacher.